everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Gross.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast / mental health check-in.
Yeah.
For two broken-brained best friends.
Yes,
talking buddy. Around their problems, but not about their problems.
Yeah.
Whilst, you know, laughing at movies. But given that this is a thinly veiled mental health check-in, I feel it's important, Ben, to ask how you're doing before we get to what we're doing.
I'm fucking fantastic, if I'm honest with you, buddy. I have had...
Oh, we've always known that.
Thanks, babe. That kind of caught me off guard. I thought you were going to be mean then. I was like, oh.
No.
Okay.
No. I'm a new man.
Oh, thank you. I've had the best couple days off of my entire fucking life. I cannot begin to explain how productive and how
right.
fulfilling the last few days have been, right? I've had 3 consecutive days off work.
Ooh,
it's a rarity.
Nice.
It's a rarity.
Yeah.
I've had it. It's been amazing.
Tomorrow's gonna suck.
Oh, dude, it fucking blows, man. I was back at work today and it was the longest day in existence. There was 113 hours in today's workday. It was insane. But I've watched an ungodly amount of Ty West films because I'm fucking obsessed with Ty West now.
And course.
Bad Ben movies. I've been watching all the Bad Ben movies. Foreshadowing.
I mean, maybe. I mean, you've told me about these films. For the listener who doesn't know what the fuck they are, shall we just keep that a secret?
Yeah.
Let's just keep that a secret.
Yeah. How are you, buddy? Fill me in.
I am sore.
You sore?
I am the mighty sore.
Who the fuck has made you sore?
I
will fight them in a car park.
I have made myself sore.
You prick. I will meet you in a car park.
I've been too eager right. with my body, mm-hmm. and I am now very sore.
Mm.
I went to the gym.
Oh, okay.
For those thinking that it was something darker.
Sure.
And I found a new gym that a lot of my colleagues go to. All the colleagues that are like, wham, like utterly little hench
yes.
people. I'm like, where do you go? And they're like, oh, we go to this gym. I went there. It's fucking heavenly. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Amazing.
It's got a beautiful view out of like one wall that's just all glass windows.
Yeah.
And because you got to drive there, there's no fucking teenagers.
Oh, I love that.
It's all just adults with headphones on.
Mate.
Who are happy to help you with the equipment.
That's the one. See, the gym's always right. risky, man, because you either go there and there's no other cunt there and you feel amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you go there and everyone there is beautiful and it's like, you've yes. all completed the gym, go to the library. Go work on your fucking
right.
break. Let the sweaty, weird, out of shape ones
yes.
use this for a bit because you've done this. You've completed it. Next level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Whereas this gang are like inspiringly beautiful.
Oh, I like that.
I could do that. But everyone's keeping to themselves. And me being the gym guy that I am, I did back,
yep.
shoulders, chest,
idiot.
Legs,
idiot.
And core all in the same day.
Why? That's fucking stupid.
Because I thought I'd get my money's worth, Ben. It was a fiver and I'm poor.
Yeah, fair. You know what? Who the fuck am I to judge? Fair play to you, buddy. You've absolutely nailed it.
What are we doing today, buddy?
Today, buddy, we are rounding out Ty West's X Trilogy series with the third and final... Maybe. The recently released Maxine.
Yes, we are. Now, this is spoiler heavy, but good news. It's available on home streaming.
It is.
If you know where to go.
It is.
I'm not going to make choices for you about where to get your films. I know where I get mine, and you do too, and it's fine.
It's fine.
We're fine.
Everyone
with that.
Knows. We're all adults here, all right?
We're all adults, all right?
Yeah.
And I use a VPN, so...
It's fine.
Protected.
No, you use VPN? I don't. Fuck.
All right, you just raw dog the dark web.
Yeah, cool. I just raw dog it, man. To be honest... Right, okay. I was getting a little suspicious of the amount of hot Russian singles that are in my area. You know what I mean?
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Literally right behind you. You can feel their breath on the back of your neck.
Oh, they're in my area. Yeah, nah, it is Vlad.
But we got a lot to get through this week.
We
are talking about if Maxine holds up to the previous stellar installments of the X trilogy.
We are. We're also talking why I relate to Maxine Minx on a cellular level.
Does the end of this film make any fucking sense?
Who is the Night Stalker?
And most importantly, did Ty West succeed in his mission to bring sexy back to horror?
He fucking
I'm assuming
did.
When you... Yeah,
there was, okay, the song was yeah, in there. Brilliant. This is why I left it for you. You're
brilliant,
welcome.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah.
We're going to be spoiler heavy. This was recently released, but there are issues in this film that I need to air. And... They all happen in Act 3.
They do.
So
they do.
I'd recommend seeing the film first.
Go watch the film.
Unless you don't give a shit, in which case, find out why you don't have to watch this film, or you should have watched this film by staying tuned.
Go and watch it, and then immediately come back to us to validate our existences. We love you. Thank you very much.
You always pull me into that one, and I'm getting less and less okay with it
it's
as
fine.
Time goes on.
It's
now,
fine.
2024, the year that this came out, the year we find ourselves in, the year of our Lord... It's a stacked year for cinema.
Fuck yeah, it is, man.
How many movies can you name that have been mint this year?
Abigail.
Disagree.
Long Legs.
Haven't seen it.
Monkey Man.
Fucking mint.
Civil War.
Possibly the best film of the year.
Ooh, that's strong. We'll see. Godzilla, X-Kong, New Empire.
May have misspoken on the previous one.
Thank you. Dune Part 2.
Definitely misspoke on the previous one.
Thank you very much. Quiet Place Day 1.
Incredible film. Took me out by surprise. Loved it.
Right?
Wish we'd covered all the films.
Right? Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Couldn't give a shit.
Yeah, it was absolute dog shit. Why have they all got American teenage voices? Doesn't make any fucking sense. Challengers.
Haven't seen it, but love the soundtrack.
A fucking incredible film. Deadpool and Wolverine.
Loved it.
The list continues, buddy. Now.
I wish it had, because I was quite enjoying that. A little quickfire podcast. Yeah, shit. Yeah, great.
I've planned this out, man. I had 2 days off. Welcome to the fucking fully fleshed out Ben show. Ready? The date that this came out, 2024, on an estimated budget of $1 million for Maxine, by the way, buddy. I need to put that into perspective, because they closed down parts of Hollywood to film small sections of this film. $1 million.
Sorry.
That blows my fucking mind that they did this.
Okay, Ben, but I don't know if I can trust this, because I...
Yeah?
For whatever... I wasn't double-checking your work. I never do. I trust you implicitly.
Sure.
But just browsing whilst I was doing my research for Maxine, found out that you fucked up the budget for Pearl.
Yeah, I did, mate. I did. I fucked that up. So, being as Maxine was only $1 million, and that shit still blows my mind... with a box office of 19.8 million. 19.8 million, that's fucking banging.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Exactly. For a B-movie horror?
Most successful of the trilogy?
Most successful of the trilogy, buddy. And this is where I spotted my mistake as well. X came out on a budget of 1 million, made 15 million.
Yeah.
I said in our Pearl episode that it had a budget of 8 million. And that was an estimated from a website that I didn't trust, but also poor research. Because I was researching the encyclopedia of fucking pre-war cinema.
Right, yeah, you had the five-hour episode plan that we got 6% of the way through before we had to say goodbye. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, that's the one.
That'll live forever.
Yeah.
Glad the audience know all that work you did.
Yeah, it's great.
Time well spent.
Mate, I'm just going to start a blog when I'm like 75 and blogs no longer exist, you know what I mean? I'll be the retro, it'll be the VHS of Ben's research. Pearl actually had an estimated budget of 1 million. So each of these three films cost 1 million to make.
Right.
X made 15 mil, Pearl made 10 mil. It's understandable because of COVID and the fucky like cinema releases. We had to wait an extra year. It was bullshit. Anyway, I'm over it. And then we've got a 20 million, nearly 20 million.
Right.
From
He's cleaned Maxine. Up. He's like the reverse. He's the opposite of Craig S. Sala.
Yeah. We did this trilogy because I fucking love B-movies. I love 80s horror. I love slashers. The gore. Everything about this. And Ty West has created a trilogy with some of the best... recent examples of these genres all wrapped up in some of the most gorgeous, delicious examples of not what just good horror looks like, buddy, but what a good film looks like. It's good cinema.
I got to admit, I'm always slightly suspicious when you plan a trilogy and you're like, I'm going to lay out everything that you need to love about this particular special interest of mine.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
And by about film three, and I go, I'm not really getting it. You're like, yeah, these weren't really the picks.
These weren't for you.
Not really the picks.
Yeah, no, I know.
And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Well, and then this one, fully on board, mate.
Amazing.
Fully on board. We'll get to that. But
on board to a point, which is more than you've been for, I mean, Goebbels' Golden Grilled Cheese Sandwich, that sold it.
Loved some of those.
Right.
Sisu can die in a fire, but like others.
Sisu's fucking incredible. What's wrong with you?
Blood and Gold, incredible.
Mad Heidi, incredible. Come on.
I thoroughly enjoyed these. Like X is a solidly enjoyable film.
Yep.
Pearl is a legitimately great film.
Yep.
And this one is complicated. We'll get to it.
It is complicated. It is complicated, buddy. But these films are important. They're important for the horror community.
Okay, and yeah, it's not Citizen Kane. Let's fucking
take a breath here. Okay, so I feel like horror's in a sticky situation the last few years.
It loves being there.
Massively hit and miss. And when I say massively hit and miss, I mean it's either like, oh, that was enjoyable, or it's like, what the fuck was the point in what I just watched?
Is that not a trope of the genre at this point, Ben?
I mean, to an extent, yes, but
right.
You go back a couple decades and you're in an area where if you're sitting there going, what the fuck did I just watch? You've got a massive grin on your face and you're like, that was the goofiest shit I've ever seen. It was someone who genuinely had a weird, weird idea, who just wanted to run with it, but the passion was in it. Whereas now it feels like a lot of the studios are just churning out the same old generic bullshit just constantly. just for the sake of getting in like three or four jump scares and then that's it. And it's boring.
Yeah, it went through a phase of that. It went through a phase of if it made you jump, it counted as scary.
That's exactly what it is. And I know you've said this in the past, and I do wholeheartedly agree with you on a different level, but I do wholeheartedly agree with you. Mm. You've said that horror is difficult because you need to make not just a good horror film, but a good film.
Yeah, you do. You do.
And I wholeheartedly believe with my entire being that Ty West has done this three times over to an extent that has genuinely dropped my fucking jaw.
Well, that's unfortunate.
I know.
Let's get into the breakdown. You'll see. I've written this week's breakdown. Here's the jingle.
We're having a breakdown.
Okay, so straight off the rip, mate, I'm going to commend you already. I've not read the breakdown, but I can see that you've titled your fucking act numbers, and this makes me so unbelievably happy, mate.
I know my best mate's kinks. You for do. Better or worse, I know what he enjoys.
I don't know why I enjoy it so much.
Titles for the acts. Yeah. That does cause a little...
It ticks all the brain boxes. Like, it just gives me a good fuzz on the brain. It's fucking beautiful. And thank you, by the way. I love you for putting this in. That's very sweet.
I love you too, buddy. I love you too. Right, act one. I'll start. Okay. Act one. Going deep with a porn star.
Yeah!
It's 1985. The serial killer known as the Night Stalker roams the streets of LA. Shoulders are extra padded, and parents are worrying about the adult themes available in kids' music and videos these days.
Yeah.
We find sole survivor of the ex-murder farm, Maxine Minx, auditioning for a horror movie sequel, trying to escape her successful but aging career as a porn actress.
Yeah.
We briefly meet her friends in the adult world, other working women, her gay best mate who runs an adult video rental shop, and her agent, played by Gus from Breaking Bad.
Fuck yes.
This guy keeps popping up and stuff, and every time he does, I am annoyed to see him.
Why?
Like, he's an excellent actor, but fuck me. Like, that first role has just become an absolute album. Do you know what? He's the biracial Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh.
Because he's a good actor, but every time I see him, I go, oh, it's that guy, and it just rips me out of...
Oh, okay,
and he's in fucking everything, and he's always the calm psychopath who doesn't show emotion but is able to he's well organized, he's got spreadsheets. Do you know, I'm just like, I'm fucking over it.
Everything you've just described is autism, and I'm like, I relate to him on such a level, and you're like, God, he annoys the shit out of me. It's just spreadsheets and no emotion in this, and I'm like,
Ben, the only sheets you have ever spread are that of the ladies of Telford. You have never opened
that's
Excel
a bold
spreadsheet
statement. Fuck, I'm like painfully single, buddy. Also, we're reading from a fucking spreadsheet right now, bud.
Yeah, and do you remember how much you complained when I instituted this system? You're like, oh, fucking spreadsheets.
Yeah, because the cells they're all fucking odd shapes. They're not. There's no uniform here. Fuck you. Read on.
I'm done. I got off track.
All right, sound.
You next.
All right, sound. Whew, let me calm down a sec. Act two, a beautiful portrait of trauma. Maxine gets the role in the upcoming horror sequel the same day she begins to receive cryptic notes implying someone out there might know her checkered past. We see the gloved hands of the serial killer stalker and her loved ones, and it's not long before one by one they begin to turn up dead, branded with pentagrams. A private investigator, played by Kevin Bacon, who is fucking incredible in this film, by the way.
He's brilliant.
Is revealed to be the source of the notes, stating that on behalf of his employer, that the past has caught up with her, and that it is time for her to face it. As the bodies pile up and the pressure mounts on Maxine, her already bruised psyche begins to fray at the edges, and her ability to focus on her big break in Hollywood slips. Given the weekend to sort herself out by the director, she actions a plan to crush the private investigator's dreams.
Act three, fuck all of you for thinking this film was relatable.
Okay.
Yeah, so serial killer is her mental priest dad who's managed to convince his congregation to carry shotguns under their robes and film his copycat murders for Christ.
Yeah.
And then there's a priest versus cops shootout.
Yeah.
And Father Ted gets shot.
Yeah.
And she stands over his defenseless, surrendered body.
Not surrendered.
And has a little daydream about how famous she's going to be and how it'll all be movies about her life and broadly fine.
Yeah.
But cut back to the present and she's like, nah, dad, you did save me. And decapitates him with both barrels of the shotgun in full view of the police.
Yeah.
Who now surround the second high body count crime scene that she is the sole survivor of.
Yeah.
Maxine rejects the daydream. She commits to her vengeful closure in a wonderful final installment of a trilogy about the unhealthy desire for fame, bringing nothing but pain. But in this one, the heroine realizes that she should fight her own demons and close off her painful memories. And rather than running to increasingly brighter lights in the hope they'll banish the shadows in her mind, she's going to reject fame. Except no, it doesn't, because then it cuts to 1 month later and she's still in the fucking film. And now she's a star and she's not faced a single fucking consequence. So the moral of the story is be a coward all the time until everyone around you fucking dies, but it's all right because it'll help you get ahead in your own career because your rivals will die, and then Judge Dredd to your dad so you can double down on your unhealthy behavior. Fuck this film.
Oh, this is going to be a great show, man. I've got so much to rebut on this, but after hearing your breakdown, bud, I'm going to take it that you hated this film.
No, I actually do very genuinely like this film.
Okay, that's good.
We'll get into it. It has issues.
Okay.
They're going to seem small, but you know when you see a nice tiled bathroom floor and it's a big space and every single one of those tiles is perfect?
Yeah.
But there's just that bit over there where someone's fucked it up.
Right.
And now the pattern's not right.
Okay.
You could have just gone for crazy paving.
Yeah.
It could have been worse and I'd have liked it more. This film could have been worse and I'd have liked it more. It's nearly perfect.
Yeah.
And as a result, it fucking annoyed. We'll get into it.
All right.
The 80s setting is, it's a bit hammy.
Right, okay. It is a bit hammy. I'm not gonna disagree with you, but I have Ty West's explanation of this, and it's glorious.
Okay.
Because Ty West has this insane ability, right? And specifically in the X trilogy, because I've watched his entire back catalogue now, specifically in the X trilogy, he's able to transport us to the time that he sets his films in, right?
Yes.
Having the movie that he's making reflect the state of cinema at the time. And not only has he done it with X and Pearl for the 70s and the pre-war film era, I feel like he's done it again for the 80s in Maxine, right?
Maybe.
So the reason that it feels a bit hammy is because it's not stereotypical 1980s, right? It's not It's not people in leg warmers. It's not like jazzercise. It's not this shit.
There's literally a scene where she walks down a street.
Yeah.
And the things she passes in the background are 80s stars, guys doing kung fu.
There is.
There's VHS in the background reading out 80s news reports.
Yeah.
She lives in like a stock cube of the 80s.
Nah, man. She lives in an amalgamation of what summer of 1985 would be. The cars are from the 50s, 60s, and 70s because people would have old cars. The furniture is from every era because people would have old furniture.
Yeah.
The movie store is for, I mean, the VHS thing is like the boom was in the 70s and the VHS stores were having their heyday in the 80s.
It's successful. I just feel like it's not the subtlety that the rest of the film has. He's really like,
but that's exactly
80s.
That's what
80s,
the 80s, 80s was, man. The 80s was loud, fucking bright pink neon signs, but also
it is consistent with the style. Yeah. It's just, I find it's a bit heavy-handed at times.
It has to be, man. I mean, we've got a memory of the 80s. I was born in 88, so I don't remember sort of like the summer of 85, but I remember growing up in a house with furniture from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Do you know what I mean? Like, and everything was like an amalgamation of the decades before. I feel like he's done that with his film, and it's fucking perfect for me.
I guess a few weeks ago, I used a word that you hadn't heard before, and you got to the point where you were using it in sentences.
If you say pastiche, I'm going to flip this desk. What's it a pastiche of? The 80s? Good!
Yes.
Because it should be.
Okay.
He's taking a shitload of stuff from the... Fuck. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Anyway, for me, I see where you're coming from. I do. I understand it. That's fine.
Yeah.
For me personally, I'm obsessed with the 80s. I'm obsessed with B movies. I love this sort of like cheap. It looks like it smells like cheap tobacco. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I live for in cinema. That's what I want. I want to watch a film and I go, that's American Spirit right there. That's what it smells like.
That's what I want.
So in this one, we're taking a trip to 1985 downtown LA, Hollywood, to all of you uninitiated. The air is thick with cocaine, stale cigarette smoke, and the finest mustaches illuminated by neon signs from back alley video stores you have ever seen. You know what I mean?
It could be subtler.
It could be.
And I don't watch, say, Todd Howard's Joker
sure.
and go, I'm really aware that this is, I'm being told repeatedly through background shots and editing styles the era.
Yeah.
It sets the era, everything's consistent with that era, and I can lean into it.
Yeah.
It's not being like, it's not like fingers down between my teeth going, eat it.
Yeah, but I think that film isn't a sort of schlock horror from the 80s B movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but okay, that's where I wanted to get you to now. Now that that statement's on record and in the transcript, which are now available for our many deaf listeners.
Yeah.
Now that's in the transcript, I wanted to just, I've got you on record, all right? Let the record state.
Deaf readers, if you're not culturally insensitive like Rob.
I am.
that's on record now for all our many deaf readers.
Yeah. I just wanted to get you to a point where it's a schlocky B bit of fun. All right,
it is.
I get that. Well, like X and like Pearl to a lesser extent. Right.
This is the point. This is what's inspired this movie. The schlocky B movie horror genre from the '80s has inspired this movie. Let's look at X. Right. X is set in the '70s. It's a film crew making a homemade porno for direct to VHS, which was going through a huge boom at the time. Right.
Yeah,
Pearl was set in 1918, war-torn, pandemic world, starry-eyed Pearl, desperate for anything other than the fucking hell that she is living through.
Yeah,
1985. It's we're making a horror sequel, including the struggles.
Yeah, it's very meta.
Very
meta. It's very like, oh, we're making a sequel to a horror movie, and how do we do that?
But
it's commenting on itself as it is itself.
It's a love of like the filmmaking process of its own.
It's a snake sucking itself off.
Oh, God.
It's lovely.
Like,
I love that kind of thing.
To completion. Me too. Let's go. Mm-hmm. We've got all the struggles of the struggles of an aspiring actor. We've got a brief look into studio backlots and sort of how they take these cheap imitations and turn them into something magical. It's peeking behind the curtain. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's peeking behind the curtain.
Some of our like biggest fucking films of our childhood. It's great.
Yeah, totally.
But with all of this, we of course have all the serial killer, true crime, culty, weird shit that you can get your hands on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a running theme throughout the film that the Night Stalker is out and about. And we're led to believe throughout the film that the murders of her friends are being perpetrated by this existing murderer who's been off killing again for many, many months.
But also, so the murders in the film match up to certain aspects of the Night Stalker's real life case. So they've sliced it in, which is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
I went down a rabbit hole with the Night Stalker, the whole Richard Ramirez thing. It's ridiculous. Right. Ridiculous. Do you know how he got caught?
Was he not one of those ones that boasted about it to a mate?
No, he was just fucking like walking about the one day and his picture was released out to the newsstands and on like news channels and stuff. And he hadn't realized. So he was just walking about doing his thing. And then a mob of angry citizens chased him down and kicked the shit out of him until the police showed up and fucking dragged him off to jail. That's literally what happened. It was amazing. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry. That it blew my fucking mind.
No, it's good.
But you had specific movie inspirations with X, you know, with like Debbie Does Dallas, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
You had the aesthetics there.
Pearl had that kind of Wizard of Oz meets Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Exactly. You've also got a lot of like Palace Follies influence in there as well, because obviously the whole... I mean, the fucking film is based around Palace Follies, right? it's incredible. But the thing that surprised me the most about Maxine is I was gasping to hear what Ty West had to say about this. What movies he took inspiration from, which sort of direction he was choosing, where he got specific elements of the film from. It's not based on a fucking film. It's not based on a specific film at all.
No,
yeah,
no. It's got like, it's dripping with references to lots of 80s movies. Like,
it is.
You pointed out when we were chatting the other day, Kevin Bacon plays the private investigator in this.
He does, yeah.
And he's pitch perfect. He's an utter sleazeball. I'm so happy with Kevin Bacon being alive and being the man he is and not just doing fucking phone adverts, but still doing great fucking performances.
But he's gone back to where he started.
Right.
He started in horror Friday 13th, right?
Yeah, totally. But his costume in this is super reminiscent. I'm like, where do I know that? And then you're like, it's literally Jack Nicholson's outfit from Chinatown. I'm like, of fucking course it
is. Yeah, like to a T. I sent you a picture of it and I was like, Kevin Bacon. You were like, eh? But yeah, there's tons of stuff like this, man. There's loads of nods.
But it's not, there's nods, but it's not a specific film.
It's not a specific film. It's just a general sweep of 80s cinema, which, again, I love.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit disappointed because I was desperate to love Ty West a little bit more.
Yeah.
And what he said in an interview was, he said in an interview with Fangoria, when they asked him about, like, you know, what was the movie that inspired Maxine? And he said, so many things, because it could be movies that are LA based or movies about Hollywood. It could also be the Giallo movies. It could also be the gritty Hollywood movies like Angel or Vice Squad. Anything that's sort of very craft forward, like from Hitchcock to De Palma.
Okay.
It was never anything so specific to say, oh, it's going to be like this, but it's recreating a world. You're not only recreating the nostalgia of the world and the realism of the world, you're also recreating people's memory from media of the time. So it's an amalgamation of all these different things. But that's what's fun about this trilogy. They can all be very different and they can all represent different eras of filmmaking as part of the same style, but they can still have the connective tissue of both cinema and then the through line of the themes of the character, which is fucking gorgeous. And I applaud this man so fucking much.
It's a great quote.
Unreal.
I feel like the loss of the subtlety in the presentation of the era.
Okay.
And the loss of the subtlety by leaning into the tropes of the era.
Right.
Plays against the quality of the film.
Okay.
It's so dedicated to not only being written in the 80s, not only representing the worries and fears of the 80s, but also showing you all of the sort of 80s tokens and symbols.
Okay.
Here's some guys doing kung fu. Here's the video store.
Yeah.
Here's the neon.
Yeah.
Here's Reagan. It then also, on top of that, leans into the filmmaking and storytelling techniques of the 80s.
Yeah.
And it continues to do that
much
more than X or Pearl does.
Yes.
And I think the subtlety of those films are what I appreciated. The subtlety of this film is what I appreciated about, what I appreciate about it.
Okay.
There's a wonderful thing with Maxine herself, right? In that we've often said on this show, like, what doesn't kill you gives you nightmares.
Sure.
What doesn't kill you makes you cry at fireworks.
Yeah, it makes you panic attack in public.
What doesn't kill you makes you suspicious of partners whose only crime is like having a life outside of you. Right?
Yeah.
Or what doesn't kill you means you can't go out without feeling like you need a pint in one hand and a bag in the pocket.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. We've all been there.
Right. We've established time and time and time again that shit happens to you and you are less capable of stuff afterwards.
100%.
But what this film does so excellently is it shows that trauma doesn't make you incapable.
Right.
Like, in many ways, it makes you more capable.
Yeah.
It's just what you're capable of may not be healthy.
Exactly.
Or healing.
Yes.
You're more capable at doing what's necessary to keep yourself safer than you were before.
Yes, buddy.
Even if the methods of doing that aren't good for your long-term health.
Fuck right? Yes, man. I wholeheartedly agree.
Maxine, after the events of X, can look after herself. She can defend herself against all sorts of horrific shit.
She can.
A scene where a guy tries to rape her at knife point and it goes so fucking terribly for him.
Oh, don't.
And all of his shopping falls out of his bag.
Dude, in the cinema, there was an audible groan of every person in there just going, oh, at the exact same time.
Cinema is so good at taking that double-edged sword of trauma and only showing one side.
Yeah.
It's like this survivor, it's a super hardcore, nothing phases them, they're a certified badass, they don't take shit anymore because they've been through it. Or this victim is a broken shell and they're weak and incapable of functioning until they're forced to step up by the events of the film. And what I love about this film is by showing both, it's not thrown down your neck, it's a little subtle, delicate dish.
Yeah.
It's like the little lightest, gentlest of fingertips only hand stuff of a film until you get to the third act and you get punched right in the genitals by a priest shootout.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. I do. And I agree with everything you've just said. And I can completely understand where you're coming from with everything you've just said. The one thing that I'm going to do now is I'm going to do my little horror flex. All right.
Right.
Because I've been thinking about this a lot. And when I watched this trilogy, my initial thoughts were X is my film.
Yep.
Pearl is your film.
Yep.
And Maxine is going to be a mixed bag. And I genuinely cannot believe how...
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I can't believe how much I fucking nailed that. I shocked myself. so you were saying about X being subtle in the 70s and stuff like this. And I agree with you. But because it's in rural Texas,
yes,
outside of LA, horror in the 70s was much slower paced. It was much subtler.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch Halloween, it's the pacing slow. It's a slow build. You watch stuff
it's a man in a bush staring at teenagers for two hours.
That's literally it.
And then one person gets killed.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's fucking incredible. But also, you've got stuff like The Hills Have Eyes, which is about literal mutants, you know, like an incest family in the mountains. Subtle as anything, it's slow burns. And that's 70s cinema. And what he's done with X is he's mirrored that.
Yes, he has.
And he's done these people building their own film in that climate, right?
And Maxine mirrors its era as well.
It does.
By being faster paced and sillier and louder.
But it's not just faster paced and stuff, though. It's exactly mirroring what downtown Hollywood would have been like. It would have been full of fucking Kung Fu studios. It would have been busy. It would have been like over the top to the point of almost deafening and sickening because everyone there is desperate to make it. It's perfect for Maxine.
I don't know if I trust that representation. I think it's too concentrated. It's a stock cube of the 80s.
Exactly.
Where
but that's what 80s
she lives
horror
on the street
is.
Where every right.
Yeah,
okay,
that's what 80s horror is. Yeah. 80s horror is sort of like it's a big buildup of huge special effects. It's testicles being stomped on, but it's not just implied now. Now it's full on the screen. Shit's being stomped on. Kevin Bacon had a full erection in Friday the 13th, by the way. I've gone through this so many times. I know that my friends have sent you a picture of me doing a fucking TED talk.
Yeah, but
whilst watching Friday the 13th.
I got a photo.
You did?
From one of your mates that I at the time didn't really have any fucking conversation history with at all. And it's just you in front of a large screen television pointing at Kevin Bacon's
penis,
love sausage, his yogurt thrower, in some tight pants.
I was
and just the line, "We're now getting a TED talk."
Yeah, I was fuming. We paused the film and I was yelling in my friend's living room about Kevin Bacon's anonymous erection that no one talks about. He said in an interview it was a sock. It's not a fucking sock. It's sharp. How many sharp socks do you own, Rob? It doesn't make sense. Anyway, sorry, I'm off topic. But anyway, that's what I mean. It's loud. It's loud. It's in your face. It's downtown Hollywood. Now we're in the belly of the beast. This is it.
Yeah.
Everything is here. Everything stems from here. So it's going to be this bustling, melting pot of everything that you can think of, just fucking bubbling and overflowing and people being like cast out like they're fuck all because it's meaningless. If you're in the belly of the beast, you're in. That's it.
Yes.
You have to fucking thrive there. It's nothing but loud panic. Intense, constantly.
I know. I lived in London for 15
this
years.
This is what I'm saying, man. I lived there for a year and I fucking hated it. Do you know what I mean? I went to Japan and it was less busy. Like, that's all I'm going to say. Like, I was in a city in Japan and it was calmer than London. I hated it. But I feel like he's done a fucking incredible job of representing the decades. The subtlety so
much. I'm not saying it's not impressive. I'm not saying it's not impactful. I'm not saying
of course not.
It's not a wonderful distillation. But it is a distillation. It's not an accurate representation.
And I love this.
And as a distillation, it's great.
Yeah.
But as a place for a relatable character to live, I'm like, why are they in a comic of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes, buddy. This leads me to my next point. Fucking perfectly. Because subjectively, I know that that's not your cup of tea.
Yeah.
I know you like the subtle storytelling. You like the sort of the deep, impactful stuff that's sort of almost whispered over a nonchalant fucking throwaway scene. Right? That's gorgeous for you.
Hide it from me. It's hide and seek.
Exactly. I want to be punched in the face by the Toxic Avenger. Like, I want to be slapped in the mouth with fucking Kevin Bacon's erect penis from Friday the 13th that no one's ever fucking talking about. I want it. I want it.
Yeah.
In and around my face. Get it on me. So the fact that this film is so hit and miss for both of us, like there's different areas of this film where I'm like, this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like the slow build up in the beginning where it's sort of like almost a
beautiful
gritty cop drama. You find it beautiful. I found it a little slow and that's fine.
Ugh.
That's fine. Because the backdrop of it was so big and so loud. And I was like, there is so much possibility to just do the most audacious stuff right now. Like, that's just the audacity that this film could have and it doesn't. And it was annoying me.
Yeah.
I related to Maxine Mink so fucking much in the third act. It was unreal because it all came to light.
How?
I know that we differ on this, right? We both grew up without dads.
Okay. Oh, right, okay.
Right.
We're bringing daddy home, okay, right.
Yeah, we're bringing daddy home because this fucking film is essentially just daddy issues completed 101. You know what I mean? Like, it's the Xbox achievement, fucking ba-ding.
Yeah.
Murder daddy. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. You grew up without a father,
but
it was never, you never missed your father, right?
No, my mum made an active decision to be a single parent.
Okay.
They were both very young. My dad decided, well, she gave my dad the choice. She's like, look, we neither of us were intending to have a child.
Sure.
A child has happened and I'm choosing to keep it, but that kind of removes your bodily autonomy. So
right.
What do you want to do? You're 19, you're signed up to uni. What's the plan, my dude?
Yeah.
And he went his way. And as a result, I never felt rejected because he'd never met me.
Right, of course.
When people say, oh, you know, do you miss having a dad? I'm like, well, do you miss wings? Oh, I've never had wings. Well, exactly. Like I didn't grow up needing that structure. I'd never put roots on a wall that then crumbled.
Yeah, of course.
Or a wall that then fucked off to get milk and never came back.
Sure.
Like I grew with all the support I had. And that level of support never changed.
Exactly, right? And that's glorious, because look at the man you've become today. I couldn't be prouder. Love you.
A 35-year-old barely employed podcaster. Yes!
See what I mean? Fucking smashing it, mate. Smashing it. I love every inch of it.
All three.
It's perfectly average, right? Whereas my dad left when I was 6, I was very conscious of the fact that he was leaving. And even when we did have contact with my dad, he would drop me off at a babysitter's, which was arguably the worst time of my life.
Yes.
Funny to laugh about it now, but that was at the time, very, very dark, sort of like weird situation. It's fine.
I can't imagine it being funny at the time, mate.
Oh, yeah.
That would be weird.
Yeah, right? Just like, get at the babysitter's and like, never guess what Fred's done. So I grew up with the rejection. It's left me with deep inset sort of fundamental abandonment issues, like weird unresolved dad
issues.
The
worst thing you can do for a child, be there and then not be there.
Or pretend to be there and then just go, nah. Yeah. Which is fine, you know, he did his own thing. He taught me a great lesson. He taught me how not to be a person. And I'm forever grateful for that lesson. I just fucking wish it would have been done in a gentler manner. That would have been lovely. You know what I mean?
Right. So we have a difference in the dad thing.
We do.
Because mine's very theoretical and yours is very practical.
And now I relate to Maxine Minx, whereas she is in the belly of the beast in the third act of this film. She's made it. She's been cast in The Puritan 2. She's been chasing this for her entire fucking life. She gave the audition of a lifetime.
Yes, brilliant.
Just that, even that little, when she's direct to camera, the whole monologue there, fuck me, mate, that was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite Pearl beautiful, but it was beautiful. She's been cast in, she's doing this thing, her life is catching up behind her, her past is catching up behind her, and then out of nowhere, this fucking bellend just shows up and he's just sort of like, oh, I'm with all the guys that are like, Hollywood has stolen our daughters, and you're going to be the star of my film. It is, but I get it because it's like her unresolved trauma from her father is now there and so fucking prominent that it's not just affecting her, it's affecting her entire life. And because it's undealt with, it's unprocessed, it's just this raw bundle of mess that is now fucking up everything that she's worked for, which is a very sort of like, it's a very on the nose way of saying deal with your shit before your shit deals with you.
Yeah.
You know
it's
what I mean?
Very on the nose.
Yeah.
And it's also completely untelegraphed in this series.
Yes.
Because X is this character, this priest, is a background setting on the television. It's not even indicated that that is her father. It's just he's a priest on the television, right?
Yeah. There's a mention that it's her father briefly.
Right. Okay. I must have missed it.
Yeah.
Pearl is then about the desire for fame. So the through line throughout this entire trilogy has been someone's desire for fame and their inability to feel like they are enough.
Yeah.
And their desire to go get that validation externally, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Then this film is all about that. And then suddenly it's daddy issues and it's like watching Godzilla versus Kong for two movies and then fucking Thanos shows up in film 3. And they go, oh, yeah, but do you not remember there was a shot of him in the first film for a bit? It'd be like if watching The Empire Strikes Back and it turned out that the dude with the shit on his head that's Lando's mate is actually Luke's father.
I mean, kinda? Kinda?
It's just, it's a blindside. It's like, oh, well, now it's about this.
Yeah.
And we're going to tell it with shooting priests. And it's silly.
Yes, it is
and
silly.
It's frivolous.
Yes, it is frivolous.
And it's fucking nonsense.
But it's a fun way to look at trauma.
But I don't know if I need that.
You don't.
I don't know if
this
I need
that.
This
is the point that I made about the father thing. You don't need that. Whereas I deal with my traumas by laughing at them, and I deal with it in a fun, goofy way, and I take the piss out of them a lot because I feel like laughing about stuff takes all the power away from it.
Right.
It's a safer place to be.
Okay.
So when the daddy issues show up and I'm like, oh, this is relatable, and then it turns out it's a priest shootout, and she chooses to shoot her father in the face with a double-barreled sawn-off shotgun rather than go and be the famous fucking star that she is literally on the cusp of being. I'm like, yes, girl. Fuck
right, we
yes.
need to get to the ending because I'm still, Ty West has still left me confused about what he means. But
okay.
But before I get to that, I want to put this fucking fun stuff to bed because this always comes up, right? Mm-hmm. Where it feels like, I know you don't disallow me,
sure.
but it feels like commentary generally says that I'm not allowed to dislike something or criticize something if something is fun.
No, fuck no.
Because I shouldn't take it too seriously or I'm thinking too much. But here's the thing. I can't control. I know you don't.
Yeah,
I'm talking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Right? Okay. Okay. Sounds. I was going to say, don't put this on me. I support you all the way. You yell at me about the most weirdest shit ever. You phone me while driving to yell at me about films I've not seen. And I'm like, okay.
but like this thing of, oh, it's just fun. Yeah. You know, you don't get it. It's just fun. You're taking it too seriously and you're thinking too much. Mm-hmm. To which I say, like, I'm not in control of how much I think.
Yeah, 1,000%.
I don't get to say when I'm thinking enough or not.
1,000%.
My brain is either on or it's off, right?
Yeah.
You put me down in front of, I mentioned Godzilla versus Kong, right? My brain is off. It's not coming on because I've made my choice.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you put a nuanced film down in front of me,
yeah.
it's going to activate, the thinking cap comes on, and I start to relate to the characters.
Yeah.
Right, their experiences become my own. I start to empathize and I start to invest in their narrative and I'm feeling what they're feeling. I'm putting myself in their shoes.
100%.
And I'm living with that character as my surrogate.
Mm, 100%.
And if I'm in that space and I then suddenly see a monkey twat a lizard in the face with an aircraft carrier mm-hmm. because it's fun, it's the genre.
Yeah.
I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
And then, oh, well, you shouldn't have expected that from this movie. It's a B movie. It's a bit of fun. It's schlocky. And I'm like, but Ty West has laid out the little trauma snacks and the little hors d'oeuvres of human insight and got the little social commentary barbecue all nice and hot.
Yeah, yeah.
But apparently I'm the cunt because I picked up a plate. Okay. All that stuff I talked about earlier, like the nuance and the care and the subtlety, is his choice.
Yeah.
So when I'm watching that film and I'm wrong-footed into, oh, actually, none of that relatable stuff that you did, it matters because yeah. it's a fucking 2D cutout of a person
yeah, yeah.
who can apparently decapitate a priest in full view of the police
fuck yeah.
with no consequence. I'm like...
I've got a point on this, but yeah.
Right. But if it's fun...
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same worth and meaning as the last bit of fun with different clothes on.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Right? It's a 2-hour anesthetic to the world that takes up some time when my brain doesn't have to be on.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but it's never going to be better at that than, say, Tremors, right?
Yeah, careful here, because you're talking about arguably one of my favorite franchises
right.
on the fucking planet.
But Tremors is incredible because it's a well-written...
Mm-hmm.
incredibly paced, perfectly put together, fun film.
Yeah.
If I wanted to just put on some fun, you're not going to beat Tremors for me.
Yeah, right? Yeah, cool. Okay, you've saved it and I'm back on board. I now love right. you again. This is fine.
So, like, that accusation of I'm not having fun with movies, like, I can always have fun with a movie.
Yeah.
Love on a Leash is one of my favorite fucking films, right?
1,000%.
But to a certain point, I'm looking for more than just, like, fun. Otherwise, it's just going on endless dates with different filmmakers and just being grateful that I got fucked.
Okay. I fully understand where you're coming from. And my rebuttal to this is, A, you're not in control of what you find fun. You just right. you have fun when you have fun, right?
Totally.
This is why I fucking love doing this podcast with you, because you make me think in different ways. And what I aim to do is to show you enough of these movies that are my wheelhouse so that you can at some point see why I'm so obsessed with this era of filmmaking.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
not trying to force totally. It on you so that you enjoy it.
No, you don't. You do a really good job of bringing stuff that I get my brain around and I enjoy.
I want to try and challenge
this
it.
This is
I mean?
A mint film. I love this film.
It's a great film. And I understand.
I will be rewatching this film.
Yeah, it's fuck it. It's one of them. But I understand wholeheartedly why the third act fucks you off. And this is why I was desperate mm-hmm. to do this trilogy. The way that it shifts gears is very 80s, right? And it's easy
yes,
to say that
is.
Because it's like a throwaway statement of, oh, it's fine, it's just the 80s. But it's almost like a trait, like a personality trait of 80s cinema, where it goes from silly or intense or
yeah.
fucking paced as one thing, and then it completely U-turns and turns into something ridiculous. Like Tremors. Let's take Tremors for an example, right?
Yeah.
Small town living. oh, what are we doing? We need to get out of the town. We need to move on. We need to better ourselves. This is, you know, it's not doing anything for us, this, that, and the other. We need to get out into the big wide world, find some wives, have some fun, do this, that, and the other. And then 20 minutes later, you're fighting a giant fucking worm. You know what I mean?
Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant. You're fighting a graboid that's...
inspired.
Exactly. But it's right. That pacing. I think it's because it comes along so quick.
Yes.
And it doesn't lead you down a sort of lane.
With
of,
this, I'm like, who's the Night Stalker? What's the trauma? What's the metaphor here?
Dude.
There's no metaphor. It's a freaky priest and shotgun congregation. And I'm like,
exactly.
You can have both.
You can.
Something doesn't have to be.
You can.
Something doesn't have to be one or the other, but you need to stitch it together better than this.
It's a cunty priest who's operating under the guise of the Night Stalker because that is what was happening at the time. And they started mixing in like copycat murders for the priest, and he was filming it to make his own film to try and win Maxine back, to be like, you can be the star of the church's film and you can be the redemption arc that we all needed. You can reinstill the Christian faith in our parish.
I've got an unfortunate analogy for exactly how this film affected me.
Okay.
It was a conversation I had many years ago with a very attractive Australian woman.
Okay.
We were chatting for ages. Yep. She's really smart. She's really funny. I was feeling super insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And as the night went on, we got a little drunker. We got a little higher. And I was like, this is really good. And then at a certain point in the night, she said, if you come back to mine, I'm on my rags, but you can throw it up my shitter if you like.
Pure Australian. Absolute Aussie classic.
Right.
If I could count the number of Home and Away episodes where that exact line was spoken, I would be in the tens. You know what I mean?
Now, I'm not saying it was a massive turnoff, but I didn't go back to hers. Because we'd started on a very different...
Right.
Track.
That's the fucking... That's Maxine. That's Maxine!
Right. Yes.
Ty West throws up the shitter.
If she'd started with that, I'd go, okay, I know what this is. I probably would have gone back to hers.
Sure. You could have geared yourself up to it, right?
Right. It was the two or three hours of erudite conversation, and I'm like, oh, wow.
Right.
Followed by that, I'm like, oh, and that's a gear change too many.
So you're sitting there thinking, so what philosophical author can I look to for my wedding speech when I eventually marry this
incredible
woman? And then she turns around, she's like, well, I'm on my rag, but you can chuck it up my shitter. And you're like, oh, it's none of them.
Yeah.
It's Dr. Zeus
at best. Both are great. Both are great. Right. Both are great, and I'm big fans of both styles.
Sure. Sure.
But if you're going to mix them together, we're going to need...
It's a slower pace.
I'm going to need some warning.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a zipper. Right. You know what I mean? The zippers are long for a reason. It takes a while to put both pieces of fabric together. Yeah. I get you. Yeah, wholeheartedly.
Literally that.
See,
literally that.
With me, mate, scared of zippers. Scared of zippers. So it's just fucking just whack them together. You know what I mean? Yeah.
There's a reason you're circumcised.
Yeah. Zippers. Speaking of zippers, I'm about to blend these two bits of fabric together. All right.
Right. But you're about to zip it up.
I'm about to zip it up.
Right.
Is the ending of the film real or fake? Is it a dream scenario or is it real? Because I have a fun thought experiment for both angles. And I think it's a very fun thing to leave open-ended at the end of this film.
So what I would like to be the case is Ty West having made a minor error in the editing.
Okay.
Not in unintentionally, like, oops, I accidentally hit shuffle.
Yeah.
Just in terms of, like, he would have had his reasons for putting it this way, but I don't think it works as he intended.
Okay.
What I liked is when she has her daydream about being a big star, and then she goes on to shoot her dad in the head.
Yeah.
And all of the stuff of her having a life after shooting her dad in the head in the movie industry is all dream world.
Right.
And it's just an awkward... edit where we have dream sequence goes back to shooting the dad and then we go back to dream sequence after a hard fade out and a fade in saying 1 month later.
Right.
That doesn't work for me because that makes it seem like this isn't dream sequence.
Okay.
With the exception of the fact that the director, Elizabeth Bender, played by the ever gorgeous Elizabeth Debicki,
incredible,
turns to Maxine and says, okay, we've got one more shot left in the dream sequence.
Yes.
And I'm wondering whether or not...
Yes.
Is that where you were going to go with
it? So I have a different theory.
I love you.
I have a different take on this.
Right.
I love the idea of it being real. I love the idea of the police seeing her father in the face with a double barrel shotgun and go, well, he has just run around and murdered like fucking 9 other people. So at worst, it's a fine.
That's not real.
Of course it's not real, Rob. Look at the film we've just watched. All right. But what?
Oh, sorry. It's fun.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you not like having fun? Do you not like schlocky B movie? God, you just don't get it.
Fuck me,
you
I
don't
guess.
Don't get it. Yeah, what right. an absolute fucking cretin. Go back to Nolan, you cunt. So what I'm saying is like, I like the idea of it being real because that's stupid, right? That's just, it's so outlandishly stupid, but it's also, and I mean this in the nicest way, with no, I'm not throwing hate on anyone, right? But sometimes when I look at the news and I see the American justice system in practice, it wouldn't surprise me.
It's lucky dip.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it is. It's like some shit happens and I'm like, they did what? And they're out now?
It's a raffle.
It's great. It's a church raffle. It's like, it's insane. But that would be very fun because then it would be a funny comment on the American justice system, which again, I think is fun. I like the idea that it's a dream sequence because in the end sequence where the moment you've just mentioned where she turns around and is like, we've got one shot left in the dream sequence. And she asks Maxine, well, what do you want to do next? She goes, well, I just never want it to end. And then it hard cuts to a prosthetic head of her that's been decapitated on the bed, implying that her character arc in The Puritan 2 is dead and done. Right?
Yes.
So there is no next step.
Yes.
But it's her looking at it going, oh, it looks so real. And it, you know what I mean? And it's that kind of like...
Yeah.
And then I think the obvious one is when the camera pans out over Hollywood and the Hollywood sign's been replaced with Maxine. Like, that's probably another big fucking giveaway, right?
Right.
But mainly the head
thing. I feel like we're probably on the right track or we're wildly off. Unfortunately, whichever version is true... Mm-hmm. We've seen this film multiple times.
I've literally watched it about 6 times now, yeah.
We've really dug into it. We've really given it some thought.
Yeah.
And if Ty West wanted there to be a clear answer, he hasn't done that successfully.
No, I think it's
and
like...
I trust Ty West enough to know that
yes.
he probably means he doesn't want there to be a clear answer, which is why it's so jumbled.
I do have a quote from Ty West for this. I read... countless articles. I've done so much research into this film, just none of which has made it to the show, but...
Right.
He has turned around and been sort of like, I don't sit down to make a movie with a meaning behind it in place. It feels too much like propaganda, and it feels like it can stifle the creative spirit a little bit, which is great, and I can agree to that. And he was like, if people want to extrapolate meanings from my films, that's incredible, that's perfect. Art is subjective. And it's there's stuff laid in there from my own experiences. There's stuff laid in there from my own filmmaking experiences. It's just a fun story that's told in a way that's able to be accessible to anyone and everyone for whatever reason. You know what I mean?
He's right. I just always hate that answer. What's it mean? What do you want it to mean? Like,
that's it.
You're right. That's correct. That's how art works. But just fucking tell me.
Just commit. You tell me what you wanted to say. Nothing.
Right, exactly.
Fuck you.
Speaking of your research, Ben, we should probably, I mean, I know it's a thinly veiled mental health check-in, but we do have to throw enough movie podcasts
there. So, well, I mean, we're running low on time.
Do we have any facts?
You sent me some questions.
Who is Ty West? Because we've done 3 of his films now.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's from.
Well,
he's
a writer, director, and editor from America. Next.
Brilliant. Who's Mia Goth?
Actor.
Remember we were going to come back to that?
Actor.
Brilliant. Yeah. Why is he making this trilogy?
Filmmakers do that. They just make films, mate.
Right. I mean, technically that is all the answers to my questions.
And you're welcome.
In the technical sense.
And there you go. We're out of time for the meat of the episode, buddy. So welcome to all of my research. That's us done for the meat of the thing. Are you ready for a game?
I'd love a game.
You want a game?
Yeah.
So me and you had a little runabout in Discord the other day where I'd planned out this really nice, simple 4 question, you know, like fun, goofy little 80s thing. I can't remember how, but you insulted me and I was like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm just going to do another BuzzFeed just to annoy you.
You're such a...
So welcome to BuzzFeed!
Yeah.
Yeah. This quiz is called You're a Fake Horror Fan If You Can't Pass This 80s Pop Quiz.
I definitely can't.
Right. It's fine. I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
I got 100%. No biggie.
Of course you
did. No biggie.
Yeah.
In The Shining.
Yeah.
What does Danny nickname his power? Does he nickname it The Shining? Does he nickname it Tony? Does he nickname it Timmy? Or does he nickname it Dr. Sleep?
Timmy?
Unfortunately, buddy, that is wrong. He nicknames it Tony.
Oh, for fuck. I mean, come on. It's the same sound.
He nicknames it Tony.
It's not Dr. Sleep, because that's that dog shit Ewan McGregor movie that I got 10 minutes into.
I did the same thing. I got 10 minutes in. I was like, this is wank. I've spoken to so many people that love that film. I'm going to have to give it another go.
I've spoken to about 20 people about the film, and one of them thinks it's incredible.
Yeah.
And the other 19 were like, eh.
Okay. Well, at least I'm in good company. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Question two, buddy. In Poltergeist 1982, the ghosts steal Carol Ann through which household structure? Is it the TV?
The television.
Is it the window?
Television.
Is it under the bed?
Television.
Or is it the closet?
They're here.
Yeah. What answer are you going with, Carol there, bud?
Ann,
you sticking with TV?
Come to the light, Carol Ann. No, it's the window, isn't it? Because the tree comes through the window.
Okay. It's the closet, unfortunately, buddy.
Oh.
I'm sorry about that one, mate. Are you?
All right, I'm a fake horror fan.
I mean, you're only two questions in, bud. This is 38 questions. In The Lost Boys, 1987, all the half vampires can be saved by doing what? Going out in sunlight. Killing the head vampire.
Killing the head
Thank
vampire.
Thank you, buddy. Love you.
Saw that one.
One for
recently.
Three. Okay, there you go.
For the first time.
In The Changeling, 1980, a wealthy family murders their son and replaces him with an orphan. Where does the father hide the remains of his son? Is it the local river? Is it his basement? Is it in a well? Or is it in Europe?
I've not seen The Changeling, so I'm going to say in Europe.
Ooh.
Confidently, with full chest.
Okay, full chest. I'm going to have to say it's in a well. I'm afraid, buddy.
Oh, all right.
Sorry about that
Ripped
one, buddy.
Off from The Ring.
Here we go.
Fine.
In Sleepaway Camp, 1983. One of the best films ever made. Felissa Rose, love you. Please come on our show. In Sleepaway Camp, 1983. What was Angela's original name? Was it Ryan, Thomas, Cameron, or Peter?
I'm going to say, as a man who's not seen Sleepaway Camp, it's Peter.
It is Peter, buddy. Fuck yes.
Yes.
Dude. That might...
Guessing like a madman.
Honestly, that might get Felissa Rose on the show. You know what I mean? If she ever hears this, fucking yes, buddy. In the...
Haven't even seen the film and I know all about it.
Right? Smashing it. In A Nightmare on Elm Street, what is the main character's name? Sarah, Nina, Nancy, or Susan?
Nancy.
Nancy it is. Fuck you, man. who's been watching horrors behind my back, eh?
Haven't seen that one either, mate.
Oh, fuck,
do you know what I
mouth.
Love about this quiz is it's testing whether I'm a thing that I've never claimed to be.
Oh, no. This is just for my enjoyment. And honestly, you're killing the vibe. Like, I was really excited about this. You're getting them all right. And I'm like, yay, proud of you. Inside, I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you. In Gremlins 1984, Billy breaks two out of the three rules for caring for his gremlin pet. Which rule was not broken?
He doesn't feed it. He feeds it after midnight. He gets it wet.
He does.
And
so out of the other two options, is it no bright lights or no squeezing?
He doesn't squeeze it.
He doesn't squeeze it. But which... Is that what you're going with? No squeezing?
No squeezing. Hmm. He doesn't break the no squeezing rule.
It's no bright lights, I'm afraid, buddy. No bright lights.
Oh, fuck's
right,
sake.
Here you go. You ready? In The Howling.
That's one I've actually seen. If I've seen them,
yeah.
I get them wrong.
Yeah. Have you ever seen... Okay. Have you ever seen Friday the 13th?
No.
Fuck you. Have you ever seen The Howling?
No.
All right, well, good. You probably get both of these right then. In The Howling, Karen White loses her memory and is sent on vacation after what traumatic event? Is it after being bitten? Is it after meeting Eddie, brackets, a werewolf? Is it her husband cheating or is it losing her job?
Losing her job.
It's unfortunately, it's meeting Eddie, a werewolf. And then last but not least, and buddy, I'm not going to put too much pressure on this one. This is my favorite franchise. This is one of my favorite franchises of all times. So if you get this wrong, friendship over. All right.
Yeah.
Lastly, in Friday the 13th, Mrs. Voorhees reveals herself to... Mrs. Voorhees reveals herself through a monologue towards the end of the film. What does she reveal about the significance of the date and how it relates to Jason? Is it his birthday? It's an unlucky day.
Ooh.
Is it her birthday or 13 is Jason's favorite number?
I'm going to say 13 is Jason's favorite number because it's his birthday.
Oh, can't. But also, I'll take the second bit. It is his birthday. It is his birthday. Yes, that is it. All right, well, I think friendship saved on that one, and we can chalk that one up to a win. You only got a couple wrong, but the couple that you got wrong were the easiest ones, and the ones you got right were the ones where I was like, so go fuck yourself, I guess. Congratulations.
Nice.
And there we go.
Nice.
We got time for Comment Corner?
We've got, I think we've just got time for Comic Corner. Yeah, I've got a brief one this week.
You give me your brief one, because I've got two absolute belters this week, and they're both fucking gorgeous.
Give me your belter, and then I'll do a brief one in the middle. And
all right, so we'll do a belter sandwich.
Belter sandwich, mate.
So the first one's from Mika Haha. He messaged us and said, hey, have either of you ever seen Under the Silver Lake? I still haven't had a chance to check it out yet, buddy. Apologies. I think that movie is criminally underrated, and I don't use this term often. Brackets, the exception being Nolan. But I think David Robert Mitchell is an absolute genius. I think if you two reviewed this film, it would give you loads to talk about.
Ooh.
Great suggestion. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. He then goes on to say, also, would love for you guys to extend your podcast episodes into an hour and a half. I'm just saying. Your podcast has saved me from my mental unhealth recently. It's so enjoyable. I've been on a tear whilst I work. So thank you both for getting me through this tough time. You really don't know what it means to me. And I read that.
What's her name?
That was Mika. Mika Haha. Mika Haha.
Okay, so Mika Haha, go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. All right.
Fuck's sake.
I didn't expect this to go this way. Mm. But I have long wanted to extend the show. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy hanging out with my mate Ben. The record is the highlight of my week. I love recording.
Right.
If I could record for 2 hours with Ben, I would. The fact that listening to him and I chat about our problems and how the movie of the week has helped us or given us some insight, hearing that, which is very much a thing we do for us, helps other people, is genuinely one of the most meaningful interactions I have going on in my life.
Yeah.
The fact that it's helped you, it really does mean a lot. And I am really so grateful for you listening. We used to do a 40-minute show, and I used to be able to edit the show from record into a ready-to-go show in about 10 hours. Mm-hmm. We went up to an hour. It takes about 18. Go up to a two-hour, mate. I would kill myself within a week. You asking for a longer show is a direct attack on my well-being, and you are not forgiven. No, all jokes aside, buddy, thank you so much for getting in touch. It does mean the world. We would also love a longer show. Until we find some way of making this make any sort of income for us, we're just at max capacity.
I think we could stop turning down sponsorships for a start. You know what I mean? We could probably start doing them.
The second somebody asks us to cover a half-decent film and isn't a sex predator,
yeah,
we'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree.
We had Studio Canal. That was great.
Studio Canal were great. Yeah, that was good.
Everyone else has been like, have you seen this random bit of footage that I've snipped together over some indie songs? Or... have you seen this known predator that we've tried to Alan Smithy off the credits?
Yeah, it is a lot like that. I also feel like Studio Canal would have worked with us some more if they were like, here's our catalogue, pick a film, and we picked the one Vietnam War movie, and I spent an hour crying in the fucking episode. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was essentially it. I think we shit the bed on that one, mate, to be honest.
If you want to hear the failed sponsorship attempts, go to our Discord, join up. There is a full bonus video review of a movie that we were asked to sponsor, and on review we realized we couldn't release because it would be the end of the podcast.
Yeah, we would have been like sued into the ground. It's fine though. It's fine.
I've got a comment here on one of our little reels that we did about, for those of you listening that don't follow us on socials, we, Ben and I, both watched the Scarecrow scene with Mia Goth in it, and we both had very different reactions. Mm-hmm. Mine was to dress up as a scarecrow and stand in a field.
And mine was to go and fuck a scarecrow in a field.
That was implied. Yeah. I don't know how heavily you committed to the bit.
This is all implied, mate. You know what I mean?
Right, nice. Yeah, yeah. Classy.
I kept it clean.
It's a classy joke about fucking a scarecrow. Mine was just me standing in a field dressed as a scarecrow. I worked quite hard on my costume.
Yeah.
And then Lady Birdie, 1983, got in touch, mm-hmm, and just went, had a feeling you were outstanding in your field. And
amazing. I fucking love. I love her so much.
Much like the previous comment, it made me furious.
Yeah, fair.
I was really annoyed that I hadn't thought of that and put that in the reel.
What an absolute star. I fucking love her to pieces. Okay, I have another one here from, I can't say your surname, buddy. So I'm just going to call you Wayne. I'm going to attempt it. It's Wayne Pasela? The P might be silent.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. I mean, buddy, I love you, and this message is gorgeous. Thank you so much. But your name is a fucking nightmare. I'm dyslexic as shit. I'm just going to put that one out there. All right. I love you. Name's a nightmare. Wayne got in touch and said, listen to your pod for the first time, the Alien 3 one. Love the passion. Love the insight. And then in brackets, even though I pretty much knew most of it. All right, buddy.
All right.
All right. We try. All right.
We keep it broad, all right? Not everyone's seen the film before. Yeah, we've got to be a good introduction.
But then he goes on to say, I disagree with your views, but that's art for you. Also, absolutely love how you guys got so candid and open about your mental health. Thank you. I've volunteered for a men's mental health org here in Australia for the past 5 years. He's put in brackets the organization that he volunteers for, and it's The Male Hug on Instagram. Go and check it out. Great group.
Oh, nice.
What you two are doing is bang on the money. Keep it up and look after yourselves. By the way, Alien 3 is a fucking masterpiece, especially after the utter shitstorm during production. So there's one for you, buddy. Yeah. Because...
that's incredible.
There you go, singing from your sheet.
What I love most about that, I disagree, but that's art for you.
Exactly what we're...
If that's not what we're trying to get across with every episode.
We've just done a fucking hour on that from this film right here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Here's why I passionately hate this film does not mean you're wrong to enjoy
it. Exactly. Dude, Wayne, you fucking get it. I love you wholeheartedly. Also... thank you so fucking much for getting in touch. You're an absolute diamond. Great job with The Male Hug. We love you and support you wholeheartedly.
That was Comment Corner. If you want to get involved, you know what to do. Find us on Instagram, TikTok, Discord, Facebook, fucking anywhere.
Anywhere.
Send us an email, everymovieeveruk@gmail.com.
Do it right now. Look, just type out an email being like, Ben, Rob, cunts, send. That'll be fucking hilarious.
We'll probably read that out.
That's next week's Comment Corner. Get it sent right now. It'll make our fucking week.
Until then, unfortunately, we are vastly over time.
I'm sorry.
So, no, it's been fantastic.
It's been a busy episode, isn't it?
It's been fantastic. Thanks, it's been lovely, and I've loved every second of it, as I do every week.
Oh, me too.
But we are sadly out of time.
What are you rating Maxine before we get to the outro? Because I can feel the outro coming.
Eight.
Okay. Wow, that's way more than I thought it was going to be.
It's a perfectly tiled bathroom with one cocky tile that I'm just going to look at forever and go, oh.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Pisses me right off. It gets me angry.
Okay.
But it's a brilliantly made film
that
fucks it at the end.
All right, that's fair.
Yourself?
I'm going to rate it an 8 because it's a perfectly tiled bathroom with one fucky tile at the end. And I'm like, God, I love the guy who put that there. He could have made it perfect, but he just chose violence. And I love that. You know what I mean? So it's an 8 from me as well.
Amazing. To thank you for your time with us, especially at the start of the week. An hour isn't a short amount of time to spend with us, regardless of what some scheming little bastards might say. I love you really, buddy. I'm just going to cosplay as society.
I fucking lung ben full gives of vape, you cunt.
I'm going to cosplay as society while Ben gives you a little motivational pep talk.
But Ben has an emphysema attack. Spending... what the fuck is this? Jesus Christ. Sorry. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just saying, Godzu.
Now listen, we can take tons of things from Ty West's X trilogy. And to wrap it out, I think the main important lesson that we can take is just keep fucking following your dreams. It doesn't matter if your past is coming around to haunt you. You can deal with it. Do you know what I mean? You can shoot your dad in the face with a double-barreled sawn-off shotgun. You can do it. The police saw her do it. She still fucking went on to be a star. We could do the same. Fuck it. You know what I mean? I think the message is, fuck you, Dad.